Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a bird, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when live and on the air.
Morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis. Welcome to Book Talk. And I am so excited. Author Cindy McDonald is here, and this time we're going to talk about Alexa Owl, and I will read you the summary in a minute, but before I forget, I want to wish safety and good luck, and I hope that Hillary and Franklin, and now we've got Idalia, and I truly hope everybody stays safe and nothing else happens to you because of the storm. One of the authors that I was supposed to interview on Monday got caught and he couldn't come to the show, so I just hope everybody else stays safe. And welcome to book discussion. And out of the blue, that ordinary angel who I love, Detective Bobby Starr, shows up at the Owl's Nest Couture shop. Much to Alexa Owl's surprise, Bobby doesn't need any help. Rather, he's brought along someone else who wants to qualify for St. Peter's guardian angel. I think we'd all need one. St. Pete has delegated this new inductee to solve a murder to get into the group. But whose murder is it? He wants to find out who killed Detective Bobby Starr. And how can she turn it down? If you want to know what happens, you got to listen to the show. So, hi, Cindy. Welcome to Book Discussion with me again.
Hello, Fran. It's always good to be here. Always.
Well, this one is really cool because, first of all, the title is great. So, we have Alexa and Winnie. I love Winnie. So, how do they deal with the two Alexas? What happens when she has to do something? Give us a little background.
Okay, well, first of all, you know that Alexa owns a couturier shop in Pittsburgh on Penn Avenue,
yep.
Which is in the strict district of Pittsburgh. And Minnie is an ornery Irish woman, and she is the manager of the shop. And through the 40s, and into the very early 70s, which thankfully we haven't gotten to the 70s yet, Winnie's parents, Brian and Molly Mullaney, were the proprietors of the Lazy Hound Pub, which used to be what Alexa's shop was. It was an old pub. So when Alexa goes into the future with Bobby Starr, what is left behind is like a replacement body, and this Alexa handles all her business dealings, does her sewing, handles her relationship with Cliff, but everybody calls this version of Alexa zombie Alexa because they say she has very little personality. So that's what happens when Alexa goes away. She's able to, her shop continues to move forward, her life continues to move forward. She just has a little replacement person there. That's what happens there.
I think everybody would love to have a replacement person, especially
yeah.
when they're going through stuff they don't want to go through. So
yeah.
She went back to the year my brother was born, not too much after me. And why does he go back to 1965? And who is with her? And what was the mission?
Okay, so when Bobby shows up at Alexa's apartment, which is above the couturier shop at the Owl's Nest, he has somebody with him, and that is Detective Clifton Slater, who is Cliff's grandfather, because she dates a man by the name of Cliff Slater, who is Clifton's grandson, and they are both homicide detectives. Clifton in the past, Cliff in the present. So anyway, he, you know, spoiler alert, Detective Slater passes away of old age in the last book, which was, what was the name of the last book? Oh, Double Dog Dare. And so now here he is trying to get into the Guardian Angel Squad. And St. Pete makes it that you have to, you know, do a few requirements to get into this squad. And in this man's case, just like Bobby, it is solved past murders that were never solved. Well, as we find out from the scroll tells us that the murder he has to solve is Bobby's murder. And Bobby is absolutely stunned because he had no idea he was murdered. He thought that he just, you know, he just died. And in fact, he was murdered. So that is the assignment. Who killed Bobby Starr? Kind of like who killed J.R.?
They shouldn't have killed off J.R. He was too good. No, seriously. But you know, however you did this was outrageous. And how Bobby died, whoa. So tell us about wife number five, Catherine, and why she was upset. And how did who else was with Catherine?
Okay, so Catherine is Bobby's fifth wife, like you just said, and she is the third wife to have the name Catherine. She had a Catherine, then she had a Coralie, and then a Catherine, and then a Venetia, and then she was Catherine, but she spelled her name with a K. So she is known as Catherine with a K. And she was a diva in a local operetta company, on stage operetta. And before the performance, and they're getting ready to put on The Merry Widow, which, by the way, The Merry Widow is not an opera. It is an operetta. And so right before the performance, one of the actors, singers, whatever you want to call them, they fall ill and they cannot perform. So Royce Hathaway, who is a dear friend and fellow opera singer, comes into Catherine's dressing room and says, "Hey, Bert Mateer is sick and he can't perform. We don't have an understudy for this man. Somebody's got to go on." And he just plays the part of the waiter. And the waiter is a very big part because he handles all the big party scenes. And Bert has a tendency to ham it up. So she says, "What are we going to do?" And he says, "Well, the only person who is your husband." And she goes, "He doesn't know how to sing. He doesn't have to sing. Just have him put on Bert's costume and go on stage and serve the drinks. And he says, "He doesn't have to ham it up. Just serve the drinks to the singers." So they talk Bobby into this. And, of course, am I allowed to go on to what happened?
Well, you could tell if you want, yeah. There are other people in the show. There's Royce, who in the other actors. And who gets upset when he dies? Like, does anybody care?
Oh, yes. Well, when he goes on stage, he does exactly what Bert Mateer does. He hams it up, you know, and he's really good at it. He doesn't sing a single note, but he, you know, serves the drinks, and sometimes he takes a sip of one of the drinks while he's serving, and the audience is just eating out of Bobby Starr's hand. Well, as Catherine is getting ready to come on stage, her cue is that the waiter exits. Well, as he's exiting, he is stumbling all over the stage. He even stumbles and knocks a singer to the floor. And by the time he gets off stage, he drops dead right in front of a woman named Pookie Mateer.
Mm-hmm.
And Pookie is the seamstress for the on-stage operetta company, and she is also Bert Mateer, the man who was sick, with his wife.
That is sick.
Yeah, the whole company is pretty upset when Bobby Starr dropped dead. Yes.
Oh, I like Bobby Starr. I felt so bad for him, but you know, somebody's got to go. What can you do?
Yes, so, somebody has to go. Yeah.
Well, this was cracked me up altogether. Then we went back to the present, and I love Winnie. I wanted to smack Louie in the head for being horrible. And, you know, this is a typical man, yeah, so why does he drop her? And why is his daughter, Olivia Dalton, like Winnie?
Well,
then there's
Louis
old
Louie, Louis,
and then there's young Louie, right? There's two Louies there.
There's old Louie, which is Louis Santorini, who dates Winnie, and the other one, his name is Louis. And that is his grandson, who I believe I said was 10 years old in the book.
Yeah.
But I introduced the character Louis Santorini in the last book, Double Dog Dare, and he's an older man like Winnie, and who owns a popular bar downtown Pittsburgh called Louis's Little Mardi Gras, which has a Mardi Gras theme all year long. And in way back in the day when they were young, Louis and Winnie had dated, but she dumped him. And now in Double Talk Dare, they became reunited. And so he has a younger daughter whose name is Olivia. I believe her name is Olivia Shipman. She's married, and that's who Louis's mother is. And she doesn't like Winnie at all, mainly because she feels like Winnie is not only replacing her mother, and I guess Louis isn't a long-time widower. He's only been a widower for like 2 years. So she feels as though not only is Winnie replacing her mother, but she is an inappropriate replacement because Winnie's pretty much a free spirit. I think we've seen that in the other three books. That she's a pretty free spirit, and she was Olivia also was a late in life child. Like she's in her early 30s, where her brothers are in their 40s and 50s. And she's, you know, when you have a child late in life, you tend to spoil them, and so she's very, very spoiled. She's used to having all her father's attention. And now here comes this free-spirited Irish woman, and he's paying a little too much attention to Winnie, and she's not in love with her at all.
I understand that. When my brother was born, I mean, came down at the bottom of the list, whatever. As a matter of fact, my mother said he was my problem because he was born on my birthday.
Oh.
So what can I say? Yeah, so I got to do all the stuff that she didn't feel like doing. That's okay. I did it better, I say, I suppose. So then this was so cool. In chapter 2, Bobby arrives. Why? And what happens when he comes there? What does Alexa do? I like Bobby.
When he arrives at the house, you mean?
No, yeah, he comes to the present. He goes to Owl's Nest.
Oh, yeah. And he brings Slater along. Right.
That's right. Angel Slater.
Yeah, he brings Slater along because he wants to, Alexa to help him get into the Guardian Angel Squad, kind of like she has assisted Bobby. Even though Clifton doesn't really need help because he's a very good detective, he just needs guidance because this is new territory, let's face it. I mean, how often are we dead? So they go to the Owl's Nest and Alexa's in bed sleeping. It's like, what, 3 o'clock in the morning or something. So Bobby decides he's got to move Alexa because Cliff is right there in bed with her, and he doesn't want Cliff to wake up and see Alexa talking to nobody. So they decide they're going to move her. So he clicks his finger and sends her to Winnie's house. And so Winnie has company. And it's 2 o'clock in the morning here. And Winnie's got company, and that company is, in fact, Louis Santorini. And so they're in the living room, and Winnie comes in and finds them in the living room, and she's like, what are you doing here? And they explain, And so that's when the scroll shows up to tell them what the assignment is. And Slater asks her, will you help me? And she says, yes, I'd be honored to help you. Well, that makes Bobby kind of annoyed because every time he shows up, she's not real quick about saying, oh, yeah, I'll go with you, Bobby. It's always, oh, I have to think about it. I've got a relationship to think about. I've got to take care of the shop. And he's kind of annoyed because Slater says, will you help me? And she says, absolutely, I'll help you. I'll be honored to help you. So Bobby's a little bit put off by that comment. So, but they do. And they go back to 1965, I believe it is. 1965, because Bobby died in 64. And whenever I write these, I always write them that it's a year later or 2 years after the death is what I usually do. We don't do it like immediate. So they go back to 1965, and Bobby has been dead for a whole year.
I felt so bad for him, too, because I really didn't want him to, but what can you do? Dead is dead. What can you do? anyway, now this is the hard part. What they were searching, they went back, and what they were searching, where were they going for the death? They were looking for the desk, right? And what clues did they find? But before we go on to what happened in the thing, every chapter has something that tells you what the chapter is about, right?
And it has a title. Yeah, we do find the title.
The chapter I like the best is Follow the Money. Because Bert hired Bobby to investigate his monetary losses at Lifetime Investments. So why did he do that? And that didn't have anything to do with Bert's death?
Well, now, Bert, when the opera that night is over and Bobby is killed, Pookie goes back home and she finds that her husband is dead. And so, you know, it comes to light that he was poisoned, slowly poisoned. And, you know, when Slater starts digging and looking into this, she keeps telling him, our finances were falling apart. We were losing money. Bert was so good with money, and he was so distraught because all of our investments were just falling through the floor. Mm. Well, then they find out, just by talking around, that Bobby was always backstage talking to Bert in a very quiet, in-the-corner type way. And as it turned out, Bert had hired Bobby to look into Lifetime Investments and find out if something, you know, kooky was going on, that they were, you know, stealing money from him. He just couldn't figure out why all his money was disappearing rather than growing. So, you know, Bobby was involved, yes, with Bert Mateer and his money problem. And Royce Hathaway, if you remember, the singer who was real good with Kaplan, he was an agent for Lifetime Investments. And as it turns out, during the course of the year that Bobby has been gone, Catherine and Royce get married. And, you know, everybody who knows that, especially the cast members, kind of raise their eyebrows at that. You know, this man dies, and then she marries another guy from our operetta company. Mm-hmm. You know, what gives? What, you know, did she kill her husband? Did she, you know, not because Bobby had a lot of money, but rather to, you know, free her up to marry another? Is that what's going on? You know, just a lot of suspicions about Catherine and Royce's marriage. So,
well, I know that. We're not going to tell them what that is, because then what can I say? But The Merry Widow was a great operetta. I took music in college. I had to memorize it. I'm serious.
Mm-hmm.
I had to memorize the whole thing, and I had to be able to repeat it back, tell what it was about, and where the music was played. I had to tell where it was in the operetta. Try doing that, people. Cool. I did it.
Awesome.
It was hard.
Yeah.
So tell us about the operetta and who played the leading role, which was really an ingenious idea, and the tensions at the music hall. I mean, weren't they worried about something, that was going to happen again?
Well, first of all, the operetta is The Merry Widow, and it is about Glenn Gowardly. I'm very bad at saying that last name. She is a very wealthy woman who has been recently widowed, and she lives in the Balkan states, Pampadera. And they want her to remarry, but they want her to remarry a Pontevarian and not a Frenchman because, you know, the country is in such bad, and they want her to save them from ruin. And they want her to marry Count Danilo. And that is the role that Royce plays, is Count Danilo. And the problem with Count Danilo is that Hannah Glowari. She and Danilo are old flames, and the Count is just too vain to marry her for her money. So as time goes by, there's a lot of mix-ups and humorous intrigues, which, you know, the Merry Widow, a lot of operetta, especially their operas are usually operettas, and they're humorous. And she announces that she is going to marry Camille Count de Zerillo. And that is when Danilo is forced to tell her his true feelings. So Catherine, with a K, plays the main lead, which is Hannah. And Royce plays the part of Danilo. And I'm sure that's how their romance blossomed by, you know, playing these roles opposite. And this isn't the first time. She's been in many of these operettas for this operetta company. And so I'm sure that's how their friendship and then their romance bloomed, was, you know, playing opposite to each other in these operas and being in this operetta company.
Well, this chapter really was interesting, too. I have the book in front of me, people. Just so I don't make a mistake.
Yeah, so do I.
So you have Chapter 14, Sister Act. Now, Alexa has to make a decision, right? And Alexa could sew. So why does she go back in time, and why does she decide that she's going to be the seamstress for the opera stars? That was really cool, let me tell you.
Well, she gets, once again, Pookie Mateer was the seamstress for the on-stage operetta company, and she'd been their seamstress for many years. But with her husband dying only a year before, and, you know, she's kind of in an emotional state, but she does come back to the operetta company and start to get everything ready for The Merry Widow. But just being at at the Carnegie Hall in Carnegie in Pittsburgh, it was just too much for her, and she just said, I can't do this. I just do it, which you can completely understand. Well, Alexa is privy to the conversation that, you know, we need a seamstress. Talis tells her that. So she says, hey, you know what I do for a living? I'm a seamstress. How about if I do the seamstress work for your opera, at least for this one? And, you know, Slater's like, what are you doing that for? Because she says, now I'm on the inside. I'm a mole. I get to see what is going on in amongst what, you know, the conversations and the relationships inside this little company. So while she's there, there's a young singer. His name is Adam. And he doesn't quite look like everybody else. He's not as clean cut and everything as everybody else is. Mm-hmm. And he keeps kind of, his name's Adam Bless. He keeps visiting with this young girl backstage. And Alexa has witnessed him kissing her, and she's got real short hair, and seeing him in the shadows with her, but she's not a member of the cast, but she can't figure out who this young girl is. And as it turns out, she is, I'm going to try and say this word right too. I mean, I had all the words before, but that doesn't mean I have them today. She is a novitiate nun, which is a nun in training. It's a young girl who has not taken her vows.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a novitiate nun for the church, St. Elizabeth, which is just right down the street from this music hall. And her aunt, Mother Viviana Reveron, is the abbess at St. Elizabeth. And her sister, and she is this girl's aunt, and her name is Sister Viviana, the girl. And she has taken her mother, her aunt's name. You know, the nuns take names. They can take the name of another nun, or they can take the name of a saint. And there are very few female saints. I want to say there's, oh, I looked it up. I think there's only like 10 female saints, where there are just bunches and bunches of male saints. So she takes, and so Alexa comes to be aware that he's like fooling around with this young nun. So at a very pivotal part in the storyline, which I think we're going to get to very soon, she and this nun switch clothing so that Alexa can escape something that happened.
Well, she gets in trouble, doesn't she? Because it's hard to tell the difference between which Slater in the front and which Slater in the back. So she was being escorted to the police station in 1965. So who is Joe Randolph, and what does he have to do with this? So how do you tell the difference between the real Steve, the real Wheeler, and the other Wheeler? And
well, they're both the
That's
okay,
weird.
There's two Wheelers. There's two Wheelers, and they're brothers. But the one Wheeler owns the Lifetime investment company, and he's out of town. And basically he's hiding because, he is doing bad things with everybody's investments in that company, not just not just Burt McPeer. He's messing around with people's money in a big way. And poor Royce Hathaway is caught up in the middle of it, and he doesn't know anything about it because he's not involved. He's just taking the heat for it. So then there's Detective Wheeler, who is who does not get along with Detective Slater at all, because Slater tells Alexa that he's not an honest cop. He's a dirty cop. But he's so good at it that, you know, there's nothing you can really do about him. And so he is trying to protect his brother's interests. But during the interim, he's coming after Alexa. And she stumbles over a dead body, and that dead body happens to be Steve Wheeler. Isn't his name Joe Wheeler? What is this? What is oh my God, I've got to look him
you
up.
Said
and see
Steve
what his name
Wheeler.
Is.
You said Steve Wheeler. Steve Wheeler.
Steve Wheeler is the guy who owns the investment company.
Yeah.
And the detective's name is Vince Wheeler. Wheeler is the homicide detective, and Steve Wheeler is his brother, who is found dead in the catwalk because Detective Wheeler is chasing Alexa. She's dressed in this nun's outfit, and he's chasing her on the backstage area, and she runs up the catwalk, and here he comes after her. And this is during the performance of The Merry Widow. This is like a performance, and all the nuns from St. Elizabeth is in the audience because they all always give them a free show. And when she runs across the catwalk, there's this hump, like this clump of something, but she can't tell it's a dead body until she comes right up to it, and then she sees it's a dead man slumped on the catwalk, and sure enough, it's Steve Wheeler. So even Detective Wheeler is unaware that his brother has been murdered and left on the catwalk.
That's
so
horrible.
he accuses the Alexa of killing this man, and just then, when he does this, Slater walks in. Only it's not Angel Slater, it's the real Slater. And he's got Joe Randolph with him, who is his sergeant. And Joe Randolph has a thing for Alexa. I think I made that pretty clear that when he meets her at the precinct, he thinks she's pretty hot.
Poor Alexa, she's in big trouble.
So they do arrest her.
I mean, it would be really cool to go back in time. So maybe the people that died, you can make so they didn't die. That would be really nice, but you can't do that. Or you could go in the future, and maybe you don't have to remember the past. I often want to do that, too. So Joe is there, so who is Piers? And the rivalry comes into play now, doesn't it?
Piers Linney is his name, and he is the director of the on-stage operetta company.
Mm.
And he is from England, and he's been the director for the company for 4 years. And he tells the Angel Slater that everybody is suspicious of Catherine and Royce's relationship and then quick marriage after the death of her husband. But he says there's nothing to it other than he was with her. He was there for her. They fell in love and they got married. And Slater asks him straight up, are either of these two people capable of murdering anybody? And Pierce tells them, absolutely not. Neither of these two people are capable of killing anyone. They just, they're just together, that's all. So, and then when Slater goes to the investment company to talk to Royce, Royce doesn't know anything about the money that is going missing other than Bert keeps coming to him and saying, hey, what's happening to my money? And he says, but Bert's not my customer. He's not my, I don't deal with his files, and his files are locked up. Steve has his files. I don't have any right to look at those files. I don't know what he's talking about. So, Bert, Royce doesn't know anything about the money, the missing money.
Well, before I forget, Monday is the last one till September, Blinded Justice. Dan Romanello will be here on the 5th. This is really exciting. Betty Slade deals with a religious magazine and inspirational, and she writes about horses. She also invited me in December. I don't know why, but I'm glad she did. And anybody that wants to try it, it's called The Six-Word Story. And what you have to do is she gives you a prompt, and you like horses, and they're always horses. You have to look at the prompt, and you have to write 6 words for the beginning of a story. So this week I gave her 12 six-word stories. And she publishes them in her magazine, and you just never know what it's going to be. It's a lot of fun. On the 12th, New York Times authors Boyd and Elizabeth Morrison, The Last True Templar. On the 15th, New York Times author, and I never do Friday, but only for John Lansing, 25 to Life. On the 20th, Tess Gerrinson, Spike Host. On the 21st, Eleanor Kearns. And on the 28th, this should be interesting, Minister Sam Oliver and I are going to talk about hospice care and how people need it. It gets interesting, let me tell you. So anybody that needs an interview, September's gone. October's gone, and November is almost gone, and December is getting filled up. That's all I could say. I was like, yeah. And I gave the last one in December to Vincent Zandre. There's a few more in between. So Bobby goes to see Louis. Why does he go to see Louis? And can you tell us more about Chapter 15? I love Bobby. I'm sorry, people. I just really like Bobby.
Well, Bobby is, you know, as a double dog dare, he fulfilled all three of his requirements and was accepted into the guardian angel. Yeah. So now he's a real guardian angel. So when he's there in the present, Winnie is going through a really rough time because Louis dumps her because Olivia is so unhappy. And there was a little accident at the house where Louis broke something. Louis and their dog broke something. And she took the blame for it. And the girl was just bent up about it. So Louis just felt as though, hey, you know, I can't choose this woman over my daughter. I have to choose my daughter. I have no choice. So he tells Winnie it's over. And even though Winnie's putting on a very brave face, she's not doing well at all, and Bobby can see this. So he starts making a few little guardian angel visits. And he visits Louis at the park with his dog Alistair. And he's throwing a ball for Alistair, and the ball bounces next to Bobby, who is sitting on a park bench. And he's dressed like anybody you would see sitting on a park bench in present day. I think he has on a pair of jeans and a polo shirt. You know, he doesn't have a fedora on. And so he's sitting there, and he gets the ball. And he has this little conversation with Louis, trying to get to his, you know, conscience. You know, it's good to tell the truth. You ought to tell the truth.
Mm.
And then he throws the ball, and Alistair runs after it, and, you know, the boy goes. Then he makes another visit with Louis, only this time it's in a, like, a Hallmark shop, because they're looking for a birthday present for Olivia, and they want to replace the broken angel that supposedly Winnie broke. And now Bobby is the salesperson at the Hallmark shop, and he impresses upon Louis again how important it is to tell the truth. And then his final visit is to Louis Santorini one night after hours, and Louis cleaning up the bar, you know, that everybody's gone, and Louis looks up, and there's a man sitting at the end of the bar, but he's dressed like the 1950s, you know, double-breasted jacket and a fedora.
Uh-huh.
And when he turns the light on, good Lord, in the morning, it's Bobby Starr. And, yeah, he remembers Bobby Starr from back in the day. And so Bobby tells him, you know, you're going to let your daughter take your happiness away? Are you going to let your daughter take a really good thing away from you? And Louis just so taken aback, because obviously this is a dead person talking to him, because Bobby Starr has been dead since the 60s, and this is the 2023, I think it is. Yeah. So he's pretty, you know, So just then there's a knock on the door, and when he goes to the door, who is it? It's Olivia. And Olivia, you know, tells her dad, you know, You need to do what you need to do. So, you know, that's what Bobby does. Go ahead.
So tell us about, before I forget, because I have the book in front of me, so I don't want to whatever, Pookie and Hazel, what do they have to do with each other? And then we'll get to the good part.
Oh, gosh, Pookie and Hazel, how much do you love those two? So Pookie is, of course, the seamstress who loses her husband, and she's kind of a mousy woman, and she kind of spends a lot of time with her sister Hazel, who is anything but mousy. She is bold. She is you know, you've got to find out what happened to your husband. You've got to, you know, this is ridiculous. They're hiding things from you, blah, 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 blah. And so Hazel shows up at the, oh, my goodness, what happens at the end there? Hazel shows up at the music hall.
And Pookie
has, oh my goodness, I'm having a hard time remembering because I'm in the middle of writing another book and I can't remember what happens at the end. Hazel,
it's chapter 17.
Right. Okay. Let me find it. I'll remember once I see it.
Well, I'm not going to say who it is. It just says they tell who killed Bert, but the people, then the present are in the past, and they don't know what to believe as to who killed who.
Right. Yeah. Wait a minute. Let me look. Oh, my God. I can't believe I'm drawing
it
a blank for
when the operator company decided to perform The Merry Widow, she went back to the music hall to work in the costume room, and Hazel insisted that she wanted information about Bert's death. And she knew Bert Starr was the victim, but she's not saying who, and they finally figure out who killed everybody and why.
Right. And oh, that's right. Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm looking at it now. Yes. Hazel tries to get Pookie out of there. She tries to get Pookie to get in the car with her and not tell Slater anything. And, you know, Pookie just can't do it. She just can't do it. So Hazel yells out the window, "I'm getting a lawyer," and she flies out the door, out of the parking lot and leaves Pookie behind because she found out who killed everybody, and she wanted an apology from that person. And she got her apology in a rather big way, didn't she? Yeah.
She got it in a very sad way, yeah, you might say.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when they find out who killed Bobby, we won't say who, because that we have yet to find out at the end, as to why this all happened and everything. I figured that, And I have that on page 250. We won't say who really killed Bobby and why. What is going to happen? I mean, when she goes back to the present, Alexa has to deal with Winnie and Louie. And what happens with Winnie? Does she wake up and realize, this guy's not right for me? Or does she like him? Or is she going to give him another chance? Or is she going to tell him what I would say, take a hike? No, seriously. My father always said, if it doesn't work out, you don't go backwards, you go forwards. Because you never know.
Yeah. Well, let's just say that all of my books end in a very good way. And the problem with this particular book is its title, A Felonious Finale. And what everybody is thinking is it's the end of the Owl's Nest series.
Yeah.
That's what everybody's thinking. And it's just a felonious finale, like at the end of a show, the end of an opera. And because that's how the opera ended that night. Poor Bobby Starr dropped dead. So, yeah, that was the finale of the show that particular evening. But it's not the end for the Owl's Nest. As a matter of fact, I am writing the fifth Owl's Nest as we speak. I am on chapter one. I just started it last week because I just finished the 12th book for Fiona. So Fiona has a new book coming in November. Yeah, November 2nd, I will be releasing Murder by the Stroke. And it just came out of edit. Yeah, I just came out of edit. And next week it goes to proofreading. And then it goes on to formatting. And it will be ready for its November release. And it's up for pre-order right now. You can pre-order that book on Amazon right now. And Yeah, so that, you know, this book does have a problem with its title because it gives the impression that I'm done, but I'm not. I've got a lot more to do with Alexa and Slater and Cliff and Winnie, and so this next book will be very good. It doesn't have a title yet. I'm having a hard time titling it. So I'm just writing, and sooner or later the title will hit.
It sort of does. The one I'm writing now, that's if I decide to actually get done. I'm almost done with it. Very proud of myself.
Mm-hmm.
You have to understand that most of my books have about 8,000 words. I'm up to 14,000, finally. I'm getting there.
Oh, wow, good. Yeah.
It's scary. It's different. I was telling the author yesterday about it, and actually it's New York Times. Somebody gave me, I can't say who, their editor, and I'm very concerned because the editor took two of my stories, and the person said that they were going to give like a free cold edit for the first two chapters, and the person said they were going to let me know on Friday what they thought, and they didn't say anything. So I'm wondering if the person likes them. What happens is if you look in the mirror and you see your alter ego, because you've done something horrible to something else, somebody else or something else, the alter ego says you're going to relive that incident and you're going to decide whether you want to do that or not, or you're going to become a face in the mirror, and what happened to the person is going to happen to you. That's my brilliance for this week. It's scary.
There you go.
I'm very proud of myself. I actually... One story I'll give away is about a cosmetologist who hates beautiful women, and she decides that she's going to teach them how to put makeup on with toxic makeup. And there is such a thing as toxic makeup. So I did some research on that, and I actually found a link that says that most of the makeup we wear is toxic, seriously. So you got to be careful what you put on your face. But, yeah, it's called Mirror Image, and if you don't want to be a face in the mirror, don't do something bad. I'm serious. That's one way to get rid of people you don't like. I'm serious. So the end of the book, we have Bobby, and he lived a lot of different lives, didn't he? And what does he do as a guardian angel? What's his job? And how does he feel about guardian angel Slater if he makes it?
Well, I think that Bobby feels as though Slater will have no trouble getting into the squad. I think Bobby has every faith that as you saw, I didn't do with Slater what I did with Bobby. I mean, St. Pete told him, you have three things you have to fix. With Slater,
yes,
I haven't given
it,
a number. Yeah, but with Slater, I've not done that, so I have some decisions to make there. But and I'm not in any hurry to make those decisions. But Bobby, I think, thinks that, yeah, he's going to make it, no sweat. But Bobby's job as a guardian angel is to help people get through bad times, or help them make the correct decisions without making the decision for them, to try and guide them. Kind of like he did with Lewis. You know, he kept appearing to Lewis, but, you know, the parents didn't see him. Only Lewis saw him. And trying to guide him toward, tell your mother the truth. Tell your mother what really happened. And so without making the child do it or terrifying the child, because every time he visited with Lewis, it was a very soft visit. You know what I mean? He didn't do anything to frighten the child. And Lewis came around, didn't he? Lewis came around and told his mother the truth. So that's his job as a guardian angel. I don't know that his job will be to stop someone from dying in a car accident. You know, you hear that all the time. Oh, my guardian angel was with me, and, you know, I didn't get killed in that car accident. I don't know that that's Bobby's job. But he is there to help people through bad times, like he did Winnie. Winnie was having an emotional bad time. And he's there to help, you know, help people, guide people to do the right thing. Even though Mr. Starr didn't always do the right thing when he was alive, did he?
No, it's scary because, you know, sometimes you look up at the sky and go like, I wish this person was here to guide me and tell me what to do. And mm-hmm. I figured something crazy out. And anybody wants to steal my idea, go ahead. When the cloud, my sister loved pink. And uh-huh. the day she died, I looked up at the sky and the clouds were pink. And every time yesterday, I look at the sky and I go, yeah, Marcia, that's what my station's named after, Marcia Joyce, my sister. And I said, Marcia Joyce, you're here watching over me. I can do anything. I'm not going to fail. I won't give up. That was her thing. She could solve anything. There, she was nothing that mm-hmm. nothing that she couldn't handle. And she was an office manager in an orthopedic doctor's office. And when she died, so did the practice. It just didn't go anywhere because she had her own way of doing crazy Marcia math. But, you know, you look up, I look up in the sky yesterday, go, she's here. I'll be okay. And you just don't know. Everybody, I think everybody needs a guardian angel. Everybody needs somebody that could tell them it's going to be all right. And that's the sad part that doesn't happen. After somebody dies, and I'm glad that Bobby is there to help Alexa and Winnie and come back and help Louie, because when somebody dies, everybody goes to the funeral, blah, 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 and then they forget they're ever there. To forget you too, seriously. So what is what is next for Fiona and Nathan?
Well,
I like them.
Like I said, Fiona's new book will be coming out November the 2nd, and mm-hmm. it is called Murder by Stroke. And it is about a hometown girl who becomes a celeb, only she's not an actress. She is a landscape artist. And the thing about this woman, her name is Vashti. That is her celeb name, Vashti. And she is drop-dead gorgeous. And she used to be Nathan's lover. Before Fiona, he was with this woman, but her name was Sadie Jensen. And there was a problem with Sadie. Michelle, Nathan's older sister, dubbed her Psycho Sadie because she would do things. She just was insanely jealous. If there was a girl who would even look at Nathan, she would do things to her. So now she's this famous celeb, and she has come to Pittsburgh for a gala of her works. And she sends Nathan an invitation. And he doesn't want to go because he had so much trouble breaking up with her years ago, and now here he is. He's married to Fiona. He doesn't want this in his life. But meanwhile, Nancy comes home to visit. It's right before the holidays. This just happens like 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, let's say. She comes home to visit for the Thanksgiving holiday, and she and Rita want to go because Rita remembers Sadie. She wants to see her painting. So they all go to this gallery to see this artist paintings, and sure enough, this gorgeous woman approaches Fiona and says, oh, you're Nathan's wife.
Ooh.
And now things start to get pretty painted, let's just say. And so it's called Murder by the Stroke. And I think that my editor told me this is her favorite Fiona. So that makes me feel good when somebody tells me, oh, this one is so good. And there's a lot of twists in this one. There's a lot of twists. And what you think is happening isn't really happening. So I think you'll enjoy it. It comes out November 2nd. And it is on pre-sale on Amazon right now. And let me tell you what. Did you see the cover of that thing? I put it on Facebook, the cover.
My thing is on Facebook. I don't live on Facebook too often, but I'm going to find it.
Well, it's on Facebook, and it is so beautiful. I am so thrilled with this. I mean, all the Fiona covers are beautiful, but this cover is just extraordinary. It's just beautiful. So
okay, hold on a minute. You know, I'm looking for it on your page, and I don't see it. But I'll look for it later. I'll look for it. I'll find it. Murder by the Throne. I'll look on Amazon. You know, it's really weird. I reviewed a book the other day, and I put it on Amazon, and they have not accepted it. I even went and bought the book to see if they would, I don't know why they don't take it. They took everything else. I did Douglas Preston, Lincoln Child, and John Lansing, and everybody, and yours all the time. And it's, that doesn't make sense. And they didn't say why either. They just pretended that it's not there. Okay, hold on.
Huh. That's strange.
I don't know why. It just says murder by the... My murder by the throat, right?
Yeah, murder by the throat. C.S. McDonald.
I don't know why. My phone hates me. Yesterday I had to help my niece. Oh, there it is. I have murder by points. That one's not coming up. I'll find it later. It's not coming up.
I'm sending it to you right now in a meeting.
Okay.
It should come any soon.
That's good. I was doing, my niece is taking medical assistant, and I'm taking it with her. I'm doing very well, by the way. And I typed the whole thing that she had to do, and I had to do with her, and my computer made it disappear. I went to sit down on the floor and cry. Yeah, she had to write, pretend you're going for an interview. What are three challenging questions that you would have to answer? How would you answer them, and how would you dress professionally? That was not hard to do. It's just that my computer didn't like it. So what can I say? Send in a photo. Okay, open. Oh, wow, this is really nice. Omida Mortimer Stroke. And that is good. And that's the girl that you were talking about. That's not Fiona.
Yes. No, that's not Fiona. That's the artist. And you see the big splash is the portrait.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You see, whoever does your covers really does a good job. I don't know
She's
if
beautiful.
I get this book. I don't know who's going to get this book. I haven't decided. I really would like to use somebody. You know, I work for so many publishing companies, and I just got an email from somebody from another publishing company that said they're going to send people to me for reviews, and I go, that's very nice. what are my requirements? Print. That's it. That's my requirement. Not for people like you, but other people that when I do through a publishing company or I do through a tour, I actually charge for the interviews because it takes me forever to do anything. And the only thing I require from an author, basically, is the book. And I don't charge for book reviews. And I saw on Facebook today, you have a site that says promote your book with Cindy McDonald. It says it on Facebook.
It has what?
There's something on Facebook that keeps saying, promote your book with Cindy McDonald, e-books and stuff. It says on there.
I don't know what that's about. I've never put anything like that up. Maybe it's another Cindy McDonald. There are a lot of us.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't.
Look, and they've got all the pictures of all your books, too, by the way. So I don't know who's doing that.
Really?
And I didn't. Yeah, if I see it again, I'll screenshot it and send it to you. But this is what's been happening. Yeah, and then there's a site that said if you join this site and pay $100, we might put you in the contest and we'll do a book review for you for $100. And I said, yeah, that's not going to happen. And then there were a few sites on Facebook that are saying, depending on the category, 75 for one category, 100 for the 200. I don't pay for book reviews, people, and I don't charge people for book reviews. And I'm wondering, Amazon usually says if you pay for the book, get paid, they won't let you put it on there. So I don't even know anymore.
Yeah.
So anyway, tell everybody where we can get Fiona and Alexa.
You can pick them up on Amazon and Books a Million, and you can go to my website. They're right there on my website, too, www.csmcdonaldbooks.com.
Well, everybody knows who you are. And usually what I say
what
to
do you
people,
mean?
I have my own fan club here. Trust me. They're not my fan club. They're other people's fan clubs. And when I say, I'm interviewing Cindy McDonald, they go, oh, I know who she is. And the funny part about it is if I say I'm interviewing a famous author, they have no clue. I'm serious. It's like no clue whatsoever at all. I mean,
oh
they
goodness.
Know Jason Bourne series, Brian Freeman, he's amazing. But when I say even James Patterson or somebody like that, if they don't read, they have no idea. Really sad. So before I go and I tell you, I have on my Facebook wall a 20, I don't know, I do this all the time, 2023 outstanding titles for this year. So you get to see what I picked. I picked
Great.
10 of them, and I just put the names of the books to tell everybody that if you want something great to read, these are the ones you need to read. Seriously. So, Cindy, thank you so much. I forgot, do you do panels and stuff like that?
Do I do what?
Panel shows.
Panels?
Yes,
yes, I do. Uh-huh. Yeah,
okay,
I do
them. I'm going to have to include you because you do the supernatural. And Vince and Andrew does the super crazy. And I'm doing this. So I'm going to see if we can set something up for January because everything. Let me know when you want the interview for the new one because November is like, whoa. I have one
oh, no,
on
no,
the
no.
second.
I'd rather do it after the new year. Yeah, because once November hits, my life starts exploding. Yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah.
even better.
So
I
after
could
the
do,
new year would be perfect.
I could do January 8th. That's a Monday. Is that all right?
That's perfect. I will do January 8th. No problem.
Okay. Let me put it in my schedule. my. That's January's filling up people, too. No, that's fine. I'm going to put that in there. This way I'll have it, and I won't screw up again. No, the November 2nd, I'm doing another one with my reading professor. So for those reading people out there and teachers, you want to listen to this. It's about the science of reading. It's a type of way that teachers teach kids how to read, and you're going to need to listen to the show as to why. There's a lot of pros, but mostly cons. That's my field.
Oh, wow.
So, Cindy, yeah, have a great day. Thank you so much. I will send you the link in a couple of minutes. Everybody have a great day, and everybody stay safe, and bye.
Bye-bye.